Hey, this is James Prophet. Thanks for stopping by for this episode of the Lake Effect Podcast. Today, I'm sitting with Mike Ferner and Susan Carter with Lake Erie Advocates, and we're going to find out a little bit about what that is, who they are, and what they aim to accomplish. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for meeting with me today.
Glad Hi, James.
What can you guys tell me about who you are? Do you live in the Toledo area, or what do you got to say?
Well, we live in the Toledo area, and I bought a house on Lake Erie in Point Place in the 70s, and the lake is in my front yard, so I can see the beauties of the lake, of the birds, of the sunrises, the moon over the lake, and I can see all the green slime every summer.
Nice, and not so nice.
Not so nice.
Mike?
I grew up out in the country west of here in Berkey, and have been living with Sue since the early 80s. So for a number of years now, Lake Erie's in my front yard too, and it's a great spot to live. It was really particularly nice when the Eagles started coming back.
Nice, nice. How long have you been involved with Lake Erie Advocates, or as it was some years back, Advocates for a Clean Lake Erie?
Since it started, we helped get it started.
Okay.
It was first Advocates for Clean Lake Erie, and we got going in our first public program was in March of 2016. It took us a few months to get organized, and we had a public program, and we've been meeting once a month ever since. About 3 years ago, we changed the name from Advocates for Clean Lake Erie to Lake Erie Advocates. In large part because we decided that year to start doing billboards and having flyovers with an airplane and a banner, and we couldn't fit all of Advocates for Clean Lake Erie on there. So
doesn't work on a T-shirt very well either.
Yeah. So it was a very practical choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Not enough room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2016, that wasn't too long after the Toledo water crisis.
That's correct. And actually, I ran for mayor, not that anyone noticed in that year, but in 2015. And it was clear that the lake, that was just a year after the water crisis, and it was pretty clear that the lake had to be a major city issue, and the other candidates weren't saying much about it. So
right.
I started speaking out about that, and after that election, people were saying, well, you know, what are we going to do about the lake? And so we decided to start an organization. And Sandy Binn had already been around for a number of years working with her group. And we decided that we wanted to take a little different tact. And there was plenty of room for another approach. And we like to get in people's faces. And we've been picketing politicians and speaking out and basically raising as much hell as legal because it needs to get done for people to notice what's happening.
Okay. So instead of the quiet, bookish type, you guys are out on the streets making noise and being seen.
We think of ourselves as more than demonstrators. We are educators and citizen scientists. No one's talking about this on a political level very much. And we have people that are into the details of why this happened, how this happened, and we want to put it in people's faces. So we've been, I mean, we have so many dedicated people that I can say, hey, listen, it's Earth Day. We want to go down to the lake and do something 2 days in advance, and we can have 30, 40 people there with signs. They're ready to go. A lot of them are retirees, not all, and they want to do something with their time.
Do you have younger people involved also?
And we certainly do, but the people that are most flexible are the people that aren't working. And yes, we do have young people involved. It's really compelling, you know. And I remember somebody asked me, well, why should we believe you? They were interviewing me. And I said, you don't have to believe anything. I say, look at the lake every summer. It has not gotten better. It has gotten worse. It has not improved. And since the water crisis, when we knew what was causing this problem, we added how many million?
At least 5 million more animals to the watershed.
And when you say 5 million more animals to the watershed, you're talking about confined or concentrated animal feeding operations?
Exactly.
What are those?
Well, they are, sometimes they're called factory farms. They're, you have to have a certain number in order to be considered a confined animal feeding operation, but almost all of them exceed those numbers that are in the EPA regulations. So anywhere from a few hundred to a few thousand cows, hundreds of thousands, sometimes over a million chickens, tens of thousands of pigs. So, you know, they're, and the thing is that there's an awful lot of them that aren't licensed because they stay under the amount needed to get a permit. And it makes it hard to figure out exactly how many there are. So we've spent a lot of time going through all of the different studies and reports that are out there so that we can try to figure out how many there are. And we're figuring there's about 30 million animals in these confined operations in our watershed.
In the Maumee River watershed?
Well, not just the Maumee River, but the Western Lake Erie, because that includes the River Raisin and the Portage River.
Okay.
Is all part of the Western Lake Erie basin.
You mentioned a lot of operations staying just under the limits set by the Ohio EPA and the Ohio Department of Agriculture. Are you saying there are loopholes for these farms?
And trucks full of manure drive right through those loopholes, yes.
Right.
Yeah, they're, the regulations, from our perspective, the regulations are quite lax, but the worst thing is there's no enforcement. So people who say, well, you know, if we just had better regulations, you know, we always say, okay, well, you can put up all the speed limit signs you want to, but if you don't want to invest in any traffic cops, it's really not going to do a whole lot of good.
Right.
And that's pretty much the situation out there.
A lot of people have put a lot of faith into the state of Ohio's H2 Ohio program, which includes many different programs, but a lot of work on marshes and wetlands, especially in Northwest Ohio. Is that not, in your opinion, amenable to the problem with Lake Erie manure and phosphorus runoff?
Well, the wetlands construction or reconstruction that the H2 Ohio program pays for is, in our opinion, about the only worthwhile thing it does. And I can't tell you exactly what percentage of the program goes for that, but it's certainly a minority of the funding goes to wetlands because it creates habitat. And, you know, I mean, this was all wetlands at one time, the Great
Right.
Black Swamp. So, you know, what we've seen over the last couple hundred years has pretty much obliterated all of them. So, you know, yeah, we need more wetlands, and that's a good idea. But those other programs where the majority of the money gets spent, putting in buffer zones in the fields and cover crops and putting the manure into the ground a little bit, a few inches, instead of just spraying it on the top of the ground, we've done the research and found out from Kansas State and Purdue and the USDA and a number of places that have done research on fields where these practices have been used. And it's all over the map. Some places they do reduce the nutrients going in. Most of the time what we see happen is it reduces nitrogen, it reduces the particulate phosphorus, total phosphorus, and that's what they were invented to do, and they do a good job of that. But they don't reduce the dissolved phosphorus.
Right.
And that's the thing that drives the algal blooms. And so these programs are being paid for by the public, hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and they're being sold as politicians can say, we're doing something, but when you really look at it, they're not doing what they say they're going to. And the big proof of it is the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement from years ago put a goal of 40% reduction of phosphorus in Western Lake Erie. And someone as eminent in the field as Jeff Reuter, who used to be head of the Ohio Sea Grant before he retired, has come out in the last couple of years and said, look, we have achieved nothing
right
towards that 40%. So clearly those programs aren't working, and that's why we're saying there's no fixing this industry. We have to ban it and get out of this form of animal agriculture.
Probably most people in this region are familiar with Lake Erie Advocates for LIBOR, the Lake Erie Bill of Rights, a few years back. That was in the news quite a lot. In fact, it made national news. How would you guys describe a brief history of Lake Erie Bill of Rights?
Well, let me say first off that Advocates for Clean Lake Erie and then Lake Erie Advocates was only in a supportive role for the Lake Erie Bill of Rights. That was primarily organized by a group called Toledoans for Safe Water, and they came together in order to put that groundbreaking approach on the ballot in Toledo to change the Toledo Charter to give Lake Erie the same legal rights as people, which was the big deal with that. And frankly, it's a legal philosophy that's going to happen at one point or another because we can't keep treating nature just like property all the time. So that was way ahead of its time. Our group helped. We did some fundraising. We helped get some of the signatures for the petitions, but it was mostly the Toledoans for Safe Water.
But it passed. People voted on it, and it passed, and everyone was happy. And then as soon as it passed, what happened?
The day after the election, one of the factory farmers that was involved with the coalition with British Petroleum and some of the organizations that represent the factory farmers were in federal court the day after the election.
Right.
So and the judge overthrew it.
Yeah.
After all that work and several years, a lot of court hearings, a lot of work, it was dead in the water, so to speak.
Very good.
Yep.
Okay.
But it was important to get people thinking about that idea that, that nature should have rights and should have the same rights as people. I mean, corporations, as more and more of us are coming to learn, have the same constitutional rights as people. Well, why shouldn't Lake Erie?
Right. When you talk about agricultural operations with animals or even row crop farmers, are there any operations that you're aware of that go above and beyond what is required or maybe expected by regulations? In other words, are there any farmers that really are towing the line and doing what they can to help out?
In many respects, yes, there are, and it kind of breaks down as to what sort of practices you're talking about. Now, for years, farmers have been doing a great job with some public assistance in some programs in reducing the amount of commercial fertilizer that they apply. That has gone down significantly in the last, say, 15, 20 years.
Right.
I mean, there's computers in the tractor cabs now that link with the GPS systems. So as they're going across the field, the equipment knows how much phosphorus, how much nitrogen to put out. And so they've reduced their application of those nutrients significantly. However, the manure increases every year. You know, we're up to at least 30 million animals, and it's a waste product. You know, the commercial fertilizer is expensive. It probably gets a little more expensive every year, whereas the manure keeps building up, and it's a waste product they got to get rid of. And so that gets over-applied. So there are some farmers that we know, some of them that are active with our group from Wood County, who refuse to have that the liquid manure applied. And what happens if enough row crop farmers say, no, we don't want this stuff, they have to go a little further and a little further, and there's where it starts getting expensive to truck this stuff further and further away. And that's why the CAFOs, the factory farms, that's why they want to apply a lot of it as close to the facility as possible so they don't have to pay those transportation costs. There's companies, we've been out in Wood County, we've seen these companies come in from Iowa and Nebraska. I mean, they must make a circuit through this part of the country and spend all spring, summer, and fall going from one of these factory farms to another and contracting to put this stuff on the ground for them.
Right. Do you ever foresee a move towards backyard farms the way it was maybe 50, 80, 100 years ago, where instead of massive operations dotting the landscape, that anybody with, you know, 2, 5, 10 acres has a chicken coop, a couple pigs, a couple head of cattle in the backyard. Is that a possible solution one day in the future?
Well, it's not as far back as 50, 80, and 100 years ago, James. Actually, these factory farms didn't come into our watershed until the mid-90s.
Okay.
So anybody from the industry or the Department of Agriculture who likes to say, oh, well, what are we going to do without them? All we have to do is say, you know, it depends. You know, if we have a very young audience, they're not going to know. But for people of a certain age, just ask them. You know, when you went to Kroger's when you know, before 1995, did you ever wait in line for milk or hamburger or pork chops or eggs? No. Well, how was that possible before we had these facilities in here? Well, thousands of farmers were driven off the land, and concentrated operations came in, and we've got this industry that was paid for by tax dollars to research and develop it, and paid for by tax dollars in order to keep it running, huge subsidies. So we're not talking about some mythical approach to agriculture. What we're talking about, I grew up working on farms. And, you know, in if somebody was raising cows or pigs, you went in a barn with a pitchfork and threw the manure in a wagon, and it went out into the field and plop, 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 you know, put the manure
right
around. You know, you can't do that with these factory farms because it's all got to be liquid manure, because there's nobody going to go through 25,000 pig stalls with the pitchfork. So it's all liquid. It all goes into these vast holding ponds, and then it gets sucked up and put on the land. And we've got the kind of land here that has, it used to be the Great Black Swamp, and so we've got these field tile and subsurface drainage everywhere, and it goes right down into those and bang out into the nearest stream. So, you know, we're not talking about a huge difference. If we subsidize the farmers who would like to do sane, humane animal farming, if we subsidize them to the extent that we're subsidizing these factory farms, I think we would see a revolution in this, and we would see a much cleaner lake.
That'd be nice to see. I should probably have asked this earlier. How would you describe Lake Erie Advocates' mission at this point?
Well, it's a scientific mission, as Mike has been talking about how to stop polluting the lake. It's also a mission of concern for the environment entirely, and also for animals. Factory farms are not farms, they're hell holes. Anyone has to look at our website and see what happens to animals in factory farms. You probably would never eat a burger again. It's criminal and it's unsustainable. And so people are concerned about animals, the environment, and I think the mission is to clean the lake, stop the animal abuse, and think of a more humane and sustainable way to bring products to people.
Right.
The other part of it is people in our group care about stuff other than themselves. They care about doing something for the community, for the welfare of the earth, and for animals. And
is that still in fashion?
I know. It's really rare. But the nice thing about it is we really have a good time doing it. We like being together, so we stuck together, as you can tell. I mean, it's been a long time, and we have a strong group, and they are active. We are going to schools. We're going to communities. We're going to protests. We dress up for the Old West End parade in pig and cow costumes. People are so happy to see us, and they shout out, "No CAFOs, no CAFOs." So
right.
this is something we've brought to the public's attention. A CAFO is a bad thing. So anyway, that's what we do, and I think we'll be doing it for a long time, but I think we'll be strong and going forward.
And we have a Excellent. Coordinating committee that meets every month, in addition to the general public meeting once a month. And we've been doing this for all these years, meeting once a month. We have a potluck and plenty of wine, and people get to be good friends. And, you know, if somebody doesn't show up, you know, hey, how are they doing? What's going on? You know, are they okay? So it's really developed into a wonderful group of not just activists, but friends.
That's nice. Don't see that a lot nowadays. Mm-hmm. How are you guys funded? I mean, do you have deep pockets? Are there major corporations funding you, like politics nowadays? Or
Well, we,
like, what can
we,
you tell me?
We call up the Rockefellers once a year tell them it's time for their annual gift.
Well, let me talk about our first outing with the billboards. Now, billboards aren't cheap, but we think that's a really effective way to talk to people. It's not a flyer. You see it when you're driving, and we try to put up as many as we can. First year, we made just by asking for donations, we got $14,000. Put up billboards, and this is out of people's pockets. We don't
from
have.
A single donor.
Not
no,
wish.
Oh, okay.
No. It doesn't work that way. From people's just donations, we pass a hat every meeting. Every once in a while, someone has a little bit extra money they give us. We've gotten a grant or two, but that's just not our major funding. It's just donations.
Okay, what can the average Joe do? A person maybe that is not retired, or maybe they don't even live in this area, but they're from here. What can the average person do to help your mission and Lake Erie?
Well, the first thing I think any of us has to do before we take other steps is to educate ourselves, find out what's going on. And our website, which is lakeerieadvocates.org, is full of information. We've put out dozens of news releases over the years. We've got links to films, scientific reports, all sorts of things on there where people can find out more about the issue. And it then takes some time. You know, this is not, you know, just falling off a log and you know the drill. So there's an opportunity for people to find out what's going on and get informed. And then look at the things that we do and see if they'd like to help do something. We've got a doctor that started working with us last year, an infectious disease doctor from the University of Toledo who needed to do a project for her public health master's at Yale, and she picked our group. To do the public,
really?
To do her project called Capstone Projects. And so she did, and she's stayed with the group. She's on the coordinating committee now. And she has been giving lectures at our meetings about bird flu because it's a contagious disease like, you know, COVID and like AIDS. And so, you know, it's people, not everybody that comes in is a doctor and a public health master's, but everybody brings something to it.
So you've got more than just a group of old hippies.
Well, old is an operative word there, but we have social workers and nurses particularly, and just anybody that cares about either animals or the lake or wants to get involved in something that's bigger than themselves.
Do you guys have opportunities to get schools involved, school kids?
Yeah, we have a program that, again, is on our website. You can watch the whole PowerPoint presentation we've given to well over 50 schools and community groups over the years. And I used to do almost all of those, but we've got a couple of members now that are knocking on the doors and making the phone calls to get the school presentations set up and going out and doing them.
Okay.
They're going to be going to Maumee Valley Country Day in a couple of weeks, and it's, you know, is, you know, sort of a grassroots approach to the students.
Excellent. What's next? Do you have your sights set on a particular project, or is there anything going on with Lake Erie Advocates that's coming up that people might want to know about?
Well, our big push, and we feel this is a good one, is getting money for billboards. Last year, we had lots of billboards up, and they said, it's 10 years, is your lake any cleaner? Something like that. They were different.
Right. But I've
obviously,
seen them.
Thank you. Good. That's what we hope. So 10 years, it hasn't changed. We'll have billboards again this year. We're raising money for that. We go to any event we can, Eco Fairs, BGSU, Eco Fest. Anytime there's some place where we can have a table, we'll be there. So we're all over the place, and we're in the Old West End Festival, and just any place that we can have a table, we'll be there. But the billboards and public service announcements are a big thing for the summer season.
Because the important thing is our group, as much as we enjoy what we're doing and feel like we're doing something, we're never going to make the changes that are needed. But we're hoping that the information that we have, the visibility that we work on, is going to inspire enough people to find out what's going on with this issue and start to care and start demanding something much better. I mean, that's how Lake Erie got saved back in the 60s. I mean, it was just about that close to dead, and it was a poster child for terrible environment, and right. One of the reasons Earth Day got started in 1970. But it wasn't politicians that led the charge, it was citizens who demanded that we quit ruining that lake, and we can do the same thing again.
Are you saying you guys are planting seeds for the future?
Well, we sure hope so. People, especially when we work with students, you know, and we had, but just, this doesn't happen very often, but a group of a dozen students from Georgetown University came through Ohio, and they picked Toledo, and they picked our group as one of the places they wanted to stop for a day and learn about the work that we do. And, you know, who knows what those students or the students that we've talked to here in Toledo are going to wind up doing with their lives, but they're going to have this knowledge that they learned that there's something significant going on right here.
And is there anything else interesting or noteworthy that I have not asked you about or you guys have not mentioned that people will want to know on this topic?
I think one thing to mention is that our local politicians, city council, and the commissioners have been with us on this. Took a while, but now they see it as this is industry that industries are going to not come here. Sailors are not going to come here. People don't want to drink the water. I mean, this is more than just animals and environment. It's business. And if you care about that, you want to keep this lake clean and beautiful.
Looking back, do you think the Toledo water crisis was a blessing in disguise?
I certainly do. I certainly do, because you know, it was a huge wake-up call. And it's too bad that it had to happen. I mean, there a whole lot of people were put through bad times. But it was one of those things that, by necessity, grabbed people's attention and got them to focus on a problem that, frankly, should have been a big deal before, but it got them thinking about it after that.
Right. I think you're right. Mike Ferner, Susan Carter, I really appreciate you guys stopping in today to talk to me about Lake Erie Advocates, the work you've done, and the work you plan to do in the future.
Thank you. Good
Thank
to be
you
here.
So much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Hopefully I'll see you two one day somewhere around the lake.
You sure will.
Thanks for joining me for this edition of the Lake Effect Podcast. I'm your host and producer, James Proffitt. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. To hear more, go to wgte.org/lakeeffect. And I hope to see you somewhere around the lake.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.